with the wrong impression that the only way Biden can de-escalate is by further escalating the situation, by increasing the deterrence and attacking, whether it's the Houthis or the Iraqi militias. The option of actually going for a ceasefire to de-escalate doesn't seem to be mentioned in the mainstream media, and that's a major mistake, I think.
Trita Parsi, I want to thank you for being with us, Executive Vice President of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. We'll link to your piece in The Nation. Will Israel drag the U.S. into another ruinous war? We were just talking about Lebanon. The Reuters reporter, Isam Abdullah, was also killed there. Reuters did an investigation saying it was an Israeli artillery strike that killed him. More than 100 Palestinian journalists have died since October 7th. Coming up, we'll go to the occupied West Bank to speak with the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate. Stay with us. By massive attack. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we've reported, two more journalists in Gaza were killed in an Israeli airstrike this weekend. Among the victims, the eldest son of Al Jazeera's Gaza bureau chief, Wael Al Dadu, just a few months ago in October. He also lost 12 family members, including his wife, his 15-year-old son, his 7-year-old daughter, and his infant grandson in an Israeli airstrike. Like his father, Hamza al-Dadu worked for Al Jazeera. He was 27 years old. Hamza was reportedly driving in a car with other journalists on a road in Khan Yunis when the vehicle was hit. The freelance journalist Mustafa Thuraya, who was a stringer for Agence France-Presse, AFP, was also killed, while a third, Hassan Rajab, was seriously injured. A video showed Wael Al-Dadu crying next to his son's body, holding his hand. Wael spoke on Sunday.
How can someone receive the death of their oldest son and everything in my life after I lost some of my family members, my wife, son Mohammed and Shem and Adam? How can I receive this? The world must see with their own eyes and not with Israel's eyes. It must listen and watch all that is happening to the Palestinian people. What has Hamza done to them? And what has my family done to them? What have civilians in Gaza Strip done to them? They have not done anything. The world is blinded by what is going on in Gaza.
Just last month, Wael Al-Dadu was injured in an Israeli drone attack while covering the aftermath of an Israeli strike on a UN school sheltering displaced people in Khan Yunis. His cameraman, Al Jazeera photojournalist Samer Abu Duka, bled to death over the course of more than 5 hours as Israeli forces reportedly prevented rescue workers and ambulances from reaching Samer. The Palestinian Journalist Syndicate says Israel's killed at least 102 journalists in Gaza since October 7th. For more, we go to the West Bank. We're joined by Anan Qusmar, a Palestinian journalist volunteer at the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate, which has filed an amicus brief in support of the Center for Constitutional Rights genocide lawsuit against Israel, citing the unprecedented number of Palestinian journalists killed in Gaza, saying they've been deliberately targeted for assassination by the Israeli military. Anan, welcome to Democracy Now! Can you talk about the journalists who were killed this weekend? Al Jazeera's Hamza Al-Dadu, amazingly killed on the day that Blinken arrived in Qatar. Qatar owns Al Jazeera. And Mustafa Thuraya of Agence France-Presse. And then put them in the broader context of how many Palestinians. We've not seen this any time in war. More than 100 Palestinian journalists, estimates from 70 to over 100, dead since October 7th.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me to speak about this, for us, very, very important issue. Hamza Dahdouh and Mustafa Abu Thuraya are just the latest victims of Israel's calculated and deliberate assassination campaign against Palestinian journalists that has been going on for the last 3 months. Unfortunately, every time we release a number, we have to update it within hours sometimes. Our investigation so far of the 109 journalists up to this moment that have been killed by Israel's genocidal military campaign indicates that at least 96 of those were deliberately and specifically targeted by surgical Israeli strikes against them at home or in the line of duty. 22 of those were killed in the line of duty using sniper fire, drones, and surgical airstrikes, similar to the one that took place yesterday that took the life of the two journalists. They were targeted in their car. The munition that was used was big enough to damage the car and kill everybody inside, but it didn't hurt anybody around, and they were targeted at a moment where there was nobody close to the vehicle at the time, so it's clearly indicating that they were specifically targeted. Other than this, there is at least 74 cases of journalists that were killed at home, specifically in strikes that specifically hit their flats. Some of them are in big apartment blocks where they are on the fifth or sixth floor and their flat is targeted, and no damage to any or limited damage to other nearby flats or homes. And in the remaining 13 cases, we were just not able to determine who exactly was the person targeted in the strike. So, for example, we excluded any cases where more than 10 people were killed. We excluded cases where people who were not at the flat or at the location were the journalists. So there is an element of, you know, what Israel likes to call collateral damage. We've also excluded from the 96 that we suggest were at least 96 specifically targeted cases like Akram Shafi'i, who a couple of days ago passed away because he was not allowed or he had no access to adequate health care. Excuse me. And at least at the moment, there is 25 of our journalists are in similar life-threatening situations because of lack of access to medical health care. Also, the wider context of what's happening now is an indication that these journalists are being targeted. As the previous guest alluded to, Israel's interest is to shut down the coverage. And our journalists are a main portal and have played a key role in uncovering the ongoing military campaign by Israel. Other than this, many of our journalists received direct and indirect threats and incitement against them that they had personally reported either publicly or privately to us due to fear that these publication of such reports or threats would actually escalate the situation and put them higher up in the bank of targets for Israel.
You've said that 9% of all Palestinian journalists in the Gaza Strip have been killed since October 7th, and that you feel that press freedom organizations around the world have let Palestinian journalists down. How?
after 190 journalists have been killed, we're still hearing the same statements that are calling for investigations. There are clear patterns. Yes, we haven't been able to establish every single case, but I am sorry, but 3 months into a genocidal campaign that has made Palestinian journalists a primary target for them, 9% of our journalists in Gaza have been killed. This is 8 points higher than the average across the Gaza Strip. I talked about the threats and the specific targeting, and we're still hearing the same thing. I think if press freedom organizations are satisfied at the level of reaction and outrage that they've shown, let alone the action that could actually save the lives of Palestinian journalists, then we should question even the very purpose of their existence, if that's the best they can do and say.
Finally, can you explain the lawsuit of the Center for Constitutional Rights that you have filed an amicus brief on behalf of the Palestinian journalists, the significance of this and what this would mean?
This lawsuit aims to block any further diplomatic and military support to Israel. It's just one step, one of many things that we are trying. But unfortunately, this assassination campaign has continued, and we've seen it as part of a wider escalation of use of violence against Palestinian journalists also in the West Bank, not only journalists, also medics. We have, since the last 3 months, 47 Palestinian journalists in the West Bank have been arrested. 33 of them are still in prison, 18 of them under administrative detention, and the rest haven't been faced with any charges at all. This level of escalation of use of force is seen is also in regular incursions where the Israeli army targets medical staff and journalists. For example, there has been, where I am in Tulkarem, regular incursions that have an emerging pattern of trying to maintain continued presence and curfew over Palestinian cities, almost as a practice in order for the eventuality of needing to control such cities for extended period of times, like I explained. And the focus of these attacks is collective punishment, digging out, for example, in Tulkarem, the water pipes to cut the water from the locals, shooting at the electricity grid to cut the electricity. And also all of this comes with a huge price on our local institutions that Israel is trying to destroy. And this also goes back to the attack on Palestinian journalists in Gaza. If you look at the profiles of those who are targeted, you see that they are not just targeted for being journalists, they're being targeted for being an important part of the social fabric. Our famous journalists in Gaza are not what you would expect from an elite journalist sitting outside. These are humble people who have been the foundations of our society for a long time, and alongside our journalists, there's been lecturers, for example, most media lecturers and journalism lecturers who are also reported as journalists being killed, but they are actually media lecturers as well. And we've had heads of universities targeted, poets, and you name it. So the one needs to look at the Israeli bank of targets seriously, and the deliberate nature of this. And I would like to end with, I think one of the most striking things is when you speak to Palestinian journalists in Gaza, they never complain about their own suffering or what they've been going through as journalists. They literally want to continue to do their work, to the last drop of their blood, in order to bring an end to this, to stop the genocide.
Anan Khosmar, I want to thank you so much for being with us, a Palestinian journalist with the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate, speaking to us from Tal Kurum in the occupied West Bank. Next up, hundreds of Boeing 737 MAX 9 jetliners have been either canceled or grounded after a door plug blew off, leaving a gaping hole in Alaska Airlines plane Friday. We'll speak with a former Boeing senior manager who raised safety concerns, and with Nadja Milleron, whose daughter Samia died in a Boeing MAX plane as she flew over Ethiopia. Stay with us. Secret Garden by Stefan Bashir-Jungens. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I am Amy Goodman. We end today's show looking at how hundreds of Boeing 737 MAX 9 flights have been grounded or canceled after a refrigerator-sized fuselage door plug blew off an Alaska Airlines plane above Portland, Oregon, Friday. The incident, which occurred at 16,000 feet, forced the plane to make an emergency landing there. The National Transportation Safety Board revealed Alaska Airlines had concerns about the plane prior to the incident, but kept flying it. During three recent flights, the plane's auto-pressurization fail light had illuminated. In response, Alaska Airlines had restricted the plane from flying over water to increase the chances the pilots could, quote, return very quickly to an airport. In 2019, all Boeing 737 MAX 8 jets were grounded after 346 people died in crashes in Ethiopia and Indonesia. All people on board both flights died. After those accidents, the Department of Justice charged Boeing with felony fraud. In February, a federal judge in Texas denied a request by families of those killed in the two crashes to throw out or adjust a settlement in the case. For more on that case and this new incident, we're joined by two guests. In Seattle, Ed Pearson's with us, executive director of the Foundation for Aviation Safety, former Boeing senior manager. Also with us, Nadia Milleron. She became an aviation safety advocate after her daughter, Samia Rose Stumo, was killed along with 156 others in the 2019 Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302, which was a Boeing 737 MAX. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Ed Pearson, let's begin with you. Analyze what you think happened here and what needs to be done. At this point, all MAX 9s apparently are either canceled or grounded for further inspection.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me. Yes, I think that right now, obviously, there's an investigation that's being conducted, and we still don't know a whole lot, but it certainly seems to be leaning more toward a manufacturing type of a problem. And as far as what needs to get done, again, as you kind of talked about earlier, and this is unfortunately a tip of the iceberg type situation. So there's been a few serious incidents that have occurred that the public is generally unaware of.
Talk about your warnings as a former senior manager at the Boeing 737 factory in Renton, Washington. We're speaking to you in Seattle. You pushed Boeing leadership to shut down production operations before both crashes in 2019.
Right. This has unfortunately been a long-standing issue. It's not a new thing, as you point out. The accidents that occurred in 2018 and 2019. As you mentioned, we had a lot of problems in the factory. Everything was being rushed. We had a shortage of skilled employees. We were having all kinds of issues with quality problems. There was just incredible schedule pressure. There's a saying in the factory, they call it schedule is king. And as we were going through those types of issues, myself and others, you know, verbalized our concerns, and we did our best to try to stop the production system at that point. And unfortunately, we were sadly unable to do that. What I've been told from employees that currently work at that location is that despite the two crashes that killed 346 people, and despite the $20 billion loss to the company and criminal behavior and all that, the situation is as bad or worse than it was when I was there, which is very hard to believe. So right now, I would say that it seems like the FAA is certainly not doing their job. They're continuing to fall down on the job. And, you know, they're solely responsible for making sure that the Boeing company complies with all the regulations. And so it is very concerning. I would tell you that this incident with Alaska, I'm sure, is shocking to passengers. But for those of us who have been watching this for a while, it's really not a surprise at all. You know, we've seen ever since the MAX has been put back in service, over 20 serious production quality defects that have surfaced. We're not talking tray tables. We're talking about flight-related systems. And the public is unaware of this. These are reports that go through in the FAA database. And it's, you know, it's not something that the airlines want to talk about. It's certainly not something Boeing or the FAA want to talk about. And so that's a real problem. The other thing we're seeing is that there's lots of requests for engineering exemptions, which is really shocking when you think that after all that, why are we having the Boeing company right now ask for delays for engineering exemptions? Basically, there's at least, you know, three or four just in the last couple months where the company has made requests for petition for exemptions from legally required engineering design standards. And these are involving flight control related systems, stall management, yaw dampener computer, the flaps, slats, electronic actuator unit, you know, and just recently the engine inlet icing. I mean, these are important systems. And why are we after all this, you know, trying to give them special treatment? That's not what the FAA shouldn't even consider this.
I wanted to bring Nadja Miller on into the conversation, an aviation safety advocate. You know, just by chance, on Friday, we spoke to your uncle, Nadja. We spoke to Ralph Nader, and I asked him about your daughter, about Samia, and her death in 2019, along with, what, 156 others over Ethiopia. She was a public health advocate. This is Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302, which was a Boeing 730 MAX. And that case, a MAX 8, this a MAX 9. What was your response when you heard about what happened on Friday? This, I mean, it's astounding. This area, the size of a door, the size of a refrigerator, the side just blew out. And it's only by chance that this almost full flight did not have people sitting right there. The seats were ripped from the from what took place, the that whole wall going out. Now a Portland teacher has found that in their backyard. Talk about your response.
First, I was so grateful, and all the families were so grateful that no one died. So this is a huge wake-up call for the American people. We have been trying Ed Pearson and Joe Jacobson. Joe Jacobson used to work for the FAA, have been trying to highlight all of these pilot reports that have been happening over the last 2 years. There are serious, serious problems with these MAX planes, and they have caused near accidents on repeated occasions. And we try to get the press to cover this so that the American people and all passengers around the world can choose whether or not to get on this flight. You know, my daughter had no idea. We had no idea that this was a dangerous plane, even though there had been a crash in Indonesia before, but it had been downplayed and said that it was the pilot's fault and badly trained pilots, which in the end was not true. And we couldn't choose. She couldn't choose whether or not to get on the plane. So now passengers should have the information that these planes have repeated problems. A lot of them are manufacturing problems. And Boeing is trying to evade safety regulations. Last year, in December of 2022, they went to Congress because the FAA wouldn't. All the safety regulations are written in blood. All of them are there because people have died. So that's the regulation is a response to the death and trying to prevent more deaths. So Boeing went to Congress, and through the Military Authorization Act, they got another exemption for themselves. So going to Congress to get exemptions for safety, I mean, the only thing that can be done, I think, is that the passenger has to be able to choose. And yesterday was the deadline for the agreement. So Boeing has criminal charges against them from the DOJ. The DOJ and Boeing made an agreement that is an illegal agreement because they didn't consult the victims. So in the United States, we have the Crime Victims' Rights Act. And when there is any kind of negotiations or procedure going on in a criminal case, the prosecutor has to contact the victims. And we reached out to the DOJ and said, we're victims. And they said, no, there's nothing going on. There's nothing going on. And then in the Trump administration, the day after the attack in the Capitol, which was January 6th, the day after, when all the press in focus was not on Boeing, they made a deal, which was a deferred prosecution agreement where Boeing had to behave well, not risk anyone's life, not defraud anyone, not lie to anyone for 3 years. And then they would apply to the court, the judge, for a dismissal of these charges. Well, this is a very clear example of how they have not been behaving, how they do risk people's lives. And we have this murderer out there in the world that has already killed 346 people and has not changed their behavior. And the only way they are going to change their behavior, in my view, is if there's accountability and if the judge does not assign the agreement and say, yes, we're going to dismiss the charges. We need to have a trial. We need to have accountability on the part of the responsible executives. And also, they need to feel it in their pocketbook. People shouldn't fly the max. And you really shouldn't fly the max just for your own safety.
Ed Pearson, can you talk about why you quit Boeing?
You know, well, first, I just want to say that everything that Nadia said, I 100% agree with. And there's so much here to unravel, and we really need accountability because that is going to drive the future changes that we need. So why I quit is, honestly, is some of the same things we're seeing today. And in fact, it's even worse than you probably know. Boeing removed production quality inspections, and they removed large numbers of them, thousands of them they actually removed. And we have evidence and information that indicates that this was done without the FAA's knowledge. And I'm including the MAX airplanes. It's not just the 737 MAX airplanes. This is also for the other airplanes at Boeing, like the 777, the 767, the 87. I mean, it's astonishing if you think about it. There's been removal of quality control inspections. There was some internal whistleblowers that reported this, and the FAA substantiated. Now, this is after, you know, two fatal crashes and 346 people. I mean, it's insanity. And so it's all being done. And, of course, you know, what you'll hear from Boeing and you'll hear from the FAA is the airplane has flown millions of miles safely. Well, that's not actually correct, obviously. And I would also add that, that type of data is metrics is provides, you know, zero insight into the quality of individual airplanes and has never prevented a crash. So those statistics are worn out old statistics that don't really mean anything. And why I quit is because I believe that the Boeing company can be a much better company than it is. It's historically, as you know, been an incredible company. I know there's some incredible people. But the leadership is horrible, and the pressure to produce and put airplanes out, and you know take chances like this with people's lives, it's unacceptable. And so you know the FAA, and also I want to make a very clear point: the Department of Transportation, Secretary Pete Buttigieg, we've written to him on several occasions, haven't even received a response, and he oversees the FAA, and so we are very concerned. I talk with pilots and mechanics and other people, and it's just very concerning, the whole picture. I didn't want to quit Boeing. I didn't actually quit. I actually retired early, but I just couldn't continue to work for a company that, you know, did that and put that kind of pressure on employees to produce. And it's not healthy, and it's not good for the passengers.
Let me ask you, we just have a few seconds, but CEO of Boeing, Calhoun, has called for a critical safety meeting scheduled for January 9th at the company's Renton, Washington factory, stressing the need for transparency and collaboration with customers and regulators and understanding what happened. Do you have faith in this, Ed Pearson?
Well, look, he should be in the factory a heck of a lot more than he is now. He barely comes to the factory. He acts like he is on the factory floor all the time. That's not accurate. He needs to get out of his corporate headquarters and go out and meet with
the
people
that are building these planes. We have to leave it there, but we will continue to follow this case. Ed Pearson with the Foundation for Aviation Safety and Nadia Milleron, aviation safety advocate, lost her daughter in a MAX plane. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Starting from